place. They were far out.
Get the hell off. We're still rolling here.
Sorry. Girls,
it's the end of the broadcast.
No,
David, come on.
You weren't supposed to go out there.
Oh, well, anyway. Well, who's who here now? Let's.
I'd like to meet Amber.
Amber? Hi.
No, this is Violet.
Violet? Which one's mine?
You'll be with Violet.
Wonderful. Well, Violet.
I thought we could get some Chinese food.
That's a good idea. Then we'll go out to the boat. We've got about 50.
Now, Cronkite had a boat, and Cronkite did go out on his boat, and I knew this about him. So we put that in the sketch, not because we wanted to show that Cronkite was a philanderer or anything like that, but just to give it a little extra flavor for people that might know that about him, that would make the impersonation more personal, you know? We did a lot of that.
It's a funny thing to think about, whether or not you knew that about him, just to think of him Cronkite after hours out with the ladies on his boat.
So cut to years later, I'm in New York doing the news show with Buck Henry, and Buck says, I got a surprise for you. And he takes me over to Cronkite's place. Because he knew Cronkite, and Cronkite comes out of his brownstone, and he says, oh, Dave, oh, nice to meet you. He talks about that sketch, and he says, why the girls at the end of that sketch? And I said, oh, God, I'm so sorry. I didn't do it because I was trying to make trouble for you. And he said, you can't imagine the kind of flack I got from my wife about that. That people were thinking that I was a philanderer and that I was taking women out on my boat. There was a lot of that going on. It was just a fun thing to do. But then there's me face to face with Cronkite having to explain it.
Okay, well, it's a very newsy topic that brings you here today. And I know that the story has to do with a collaborator of yours and an animation company that you were running out of Ukraine that got you to kind of just know that country and know the people who live in it. And that led to you traveling there recently. Can you tell everybody why you went there now?
I was friends with this guy named Andy Bain, who had invested in the Ukraine after the Soviet Union dissolved. He bought a couple of businesses. One of them was an animation studio. So we were looking at the idea of setting up an American animation studio and outsourcing to the Ukraine for cheaper labor. And we worked with these Ukrainians for about a decade. Well, when the war started in 2014, Andy stayed in the Ukraine. And because he has a military background, he started pulling on his military resources to try to bring aid to help the Ukrainians fight off the Russians. He founded this company called the Ukrainian Freedom Fund, and it's the UFF.org, and it's a charitable organization that you can get tax deductions from your donations, and I urge people to go there and donate if they can. TheUFF.org. Don't forget the in front of UFF. And they do wonderful things. They started supplying food and medical supplies and things like that to the troops. And then they started rescuing people with a evac team and going into Russian-occupied places and bringing out women and children. So they're doing all this really good work to stop Putin from his invasion. And he asked me, would I lend a hand? He said, you know, you're a Canadian celebrity. Maybe you could expand our donor base in Canada if you put your name to this. And I said, all right, I'll come. What the hell, you know? So I went. And when I got to Kyiv, I was really surprised because I looked at this city and expected this war torn. It looked like a normal European city. You know, people were sitting, sipping lattes and students were lined up for school. Where's the sign of war? I didn't see anything until the first night in my hotel. And then there were rocket attacks and drone attacks and things like that. Your room is rocking and you really, oh, holy shit. You know what I mean? I went and I interviewed people. I talked to a soldier that they're doing targeted drone attacks now, the Russians are, where this guy is a communications officer and they targeted him because he was a communications officer, and they blew him up in his personal car. And he didn't die, but he lost his legs. And I was talking to him in a bar, and he said, they blew up the wrong half of me because this half can still fight. And he's got that spirit of, like, moving forward like nothing's happened, even though he's lost limbs. So I talked to students. I talked to stand-up comedians. I wanted to find out if people were laughing and what they were laughing at. is there something to laugh at when you're in a war like this?
What were they laughing at, Dave? What where did they find the humor?
The comedians I talked to said that they don't want to, that they tried the Putin, Trump, and Zelensky jokes at the outset of the war, and it played a little bit and then died out. People didn't want to hear about it anymore. They wanted comedy about their lives. They wanted to talk about dating and normal human things that bring us all together as human beings and not the war. They wanted to laugh at things that connected them as people that had nothing to do with the war. So that seems to be what's working comedically right now.
Slapstick and fart jokes. Satire is for peacetime.
I don't pretend to understand the politics of it, but I sure understand the humanity of it. And when I see people suffering like this and I see there being no good reason for the conflict in the first place, I can't help but think, you know, somebody ought to do something. And the fact that Andy's organization is at least trying to help these people endure, they're doing a worthwhile job.
Dave, I really appreciate the time you've given today. Where do you want to direct people one more time who want to help out with your friend's organization?
Okay, so the organization to help Ukrainians is theuff.org. These people need your help. And hey, Canadians have this reputation of being good guys. And, you know, I think we are. And what better way of showing that we're good guys than sending a couple of bucks to a place that's in trouble?
Thanks again.
Thanks.
That is your Canada Land for today. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me about today's episode at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything that you send. Our website is canadaland.com. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing from Caleb Thompson. Today's episode was fact-checked by Julian Abraham. Our director of audio is Max Collins. I'm the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we're talking about the news. We will talk about that New Brunswick neurological medical mystery. Mystery solved, according to the news.
A new study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association says there's no mystery brain disease in New Brunswick.
Nothing worse the media can do than to say nothing to see here, folks, and be wrong about that. Wait for that. Welcome back to the show, independent journalist and author Laura Robinson. Hello.
Hello, Jesse.
Laura, I want to speak with you today about this story that we have been covering for years about this medical mystery in New Brunswick. Have you been following the story at all?
I have been. Not as carefully probably as you, but I have been because it is such a mystery.
I find that this is one of the most difficult stories for newsreaders to follow because it's taking so long to get to the facts, and because there seems to be a concerted effort to keep people from the facts. I'll give our listeners a quick memory jog as to what this was all about. So this first made national news in 2021, but cases of this illness had been popping up for years at that point.
The first case can be traced back to 2015. More started to emerge in 2019. But the mysterious disease's existence only became public just over a month ago.
It was originally the government itself that told us that there was what they called a cluster of 48 patients who were contracting these awful diseases.
Good afternoon, everyone. Bonjour. Thank you for being here today for an update on the investigation into a potential New Brunswick cluster of a neurological syndrome of unknown cause. As of Friday, May the 28th, 2021, there have been 48 individuals identified as experiencing signs and symptoms of a neurological syndrome of unknown cause.
Some of these people were in their 20s, 30s, 40s, but they were getting these neurological syndromes where they were hallucinating, they were losing the ability to walk, losing the ability to speak, and a number of them died. And New Brunswick said that we're going to get to the bottom of this.
At the federal level, Public Health New Brunswick has engaged with the Public Health Agency of Canada, CJDSS, the National Medical Laboratory Outbreak Management Division, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, Zoonotics Division, and subject matter experts from BC Centre for Disease Control. And Public Health continues to collaborate with subject matter experts at the provincial level, including the Departments of Environment and Local Government, Agriculture, Aquaculture and Fisheries, Natural Resources and Energy Development, and the Canadian Food Inspection Agency District Veterinarian and the Moncton Mine Clinic. And today, we are assembled here this afternoon to announce that Public Health is working directly with Horizon Health Network and Vitalité Health Network to implement a joint oversight committee at the clinical and investigative levels. We have started a full investigation into these cases. We are dedicated to reviewing all the case files of those under investigation and have faith that this diligence will pay off.
And then all of a sudden, a year later, just as the provincial health authorities were coordinating with federal health authorities and they were going to just leave no stone unturned, it all stopped. And our reporting later revealed that calendars were wiped of meetings between these groups. $5 million of money that was made available for research was suddenly, it was rejected. We don't want that money. And the province announced, there's nothing to see here. There is no mystery illness.
The committee has concluded that no such syndrome exists.
That is what happened back then. And since then, the number 48 has climbed to, according to the neurologist who's leading this, over 500 cases. And it's not just in New Brunswick. And the current new premier of New Brunswick ran on a platform that included opening this up to a new full investigation to find out what the heck was actually at the root of this.
We need to get the right team together to look through the data and the environments and run a complete and thorough scientific investigation until we can answer the question with some confidence and reliability that this is what's making New Brunswickers sick.
And she won. And it looked like finally these patients were going to get what they've been asking for, which is at least let's search for answers. And then, just a couple of weeks ago, this news story dropped.
A new study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association says there's no mystery brain disease in New Brunswick. The report's authors reassessed 25 patients that had been diagnosed with a so-called neurological syndrome of unknown cause by Moncton's Dr. Elie Marrero. They say instead, all 25 patients had a well-known condition like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or cancer. Dr. Anthony Lang is one of the 13 authors.
In 100% of cases, we could explain the diagnosis on the basis of known neurological problems. Some had neurodegenerative diseases, but others had other neurological problems. And therefore, a single environmental toxin, which has been claimed and has evolved over time, a single environmental toxin could never have explained this broad variety of neurological abnormalities.
The report comes as the province itself investigates the mystery symptoms and whether environmental toxins may be behind them. Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Yves Legere, says a public report with recommendations is expected this summer, but Lang isn't sure it's necessary.
I don't think we need an extensive, expensive environmental survey.
Laura, what do you make of what you just heard?
It is disturbing. It's just, I feel that we're not getting the amount of information necessary to really understand this. This isn't something that lay people like you and I can easily understand to begin with, but what we can understand is when information is not readily available and explanations are suddenly, there's nothing to this. when there is something to it.
I think that that might be more of a skeptical response than a lot of newsreaders would take. It's certainly a more skeptical response than the news media took, because the headlines that ran around the world after this new study came out from the Journal of the American Medical Association is that essentially this has been debunked. CBC, New Brunswick has no mystery neurological disease, scientific study concludes. National Post, that mystery brain disease plaguing people in New Brunswick, a new study finds it's not real. CTV, mystery brain disease doesn't exist, medical study says. Science Alert, no, there isn't a mystery brain disease spreading in Canada. NBC News, mystery brain disease in Canada wasn't a mystery after all. Will you indulge me, Laura, as I go into some level of detail in my response to this news story?
Sure, I'm always ready to listen.
Thank you. And I'm going to rely here not on Canada Land's reporting on this as much as I want to, because we broke big aspects of this. Sarah Larniuk, our reporter, was on this before pretty much everybody else. But I think that the listener can be forgiven for wondering if I have too much pride invested in this story, that I'm going to push back against people who are medical professionals. I'm instead going to quote from other news sources that followed us into the story, including the New York Times and the Guardian. And people can make up their own minds, but I just want to unpack in a close read kind of a way what we just heard. It certainly sounds like this was a thorough dismissal of this whole thing from somebody who should know. We heard from a report in a medical journal, nothing to see here. So the headline, that there is no mystery disease, conclusive. And this is what Dr. Anthony Lang said. When we did the statistics, the chances of any of those other individuals having a mystery disease was less than 1 in 1,000,000. That sounds really conclusive to me. There is no mystery disease. We have known for a long time that there is no mystery disease. It is a completely misleading headline, because the mystery is what's causing known illnesses. 25-year-olds do not typically get Alzheimer's or dementia or Parkinson's and then die 3 years later. But that is what happened to dozens of people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, and 50s who live in the Maritimes. So that whole premise that we were in search of a mystery disease and there isn't one is just faulty from the beginning. And anybody who's been following this knows that. It's about the cause. That's the mystery. What is causing all of these people to get known diseases? And public health scientists, this is quoting from The Guardian earlier on, agreed that both the number of the patients and their ages were unprecedented at the national and provincial levels. So, like, that's the big one. It's just the way that this is being presented, it feels tremendously misleading to me. But Dr. Lang does speak to that in that clip. He does address this issue of the cause being the thing here.
A single environmental toxin could never have explained this broad variety of neurological abnormalities.
Laura, again, this feels so strange to me. Like, it feels intentional, because nobody said that there was a single environmental factor. In fact, if you go through the coverage over the years and the scientific reports, you'll see that, like, a number of possible causes have been contemplated here. So here's the New York Times. In New Brunswick, the evidence for a shared environmental contaminant was strong. The patients were grouped in two primary locations, the Moncton area and the Acadian Peninsula. There are also, this is important, a number of households with multiple patients who are not genetically linked. Husbands and wives, stepfathers and stepdaughters, a nursing student in her ward. So as strange as it is for two young people to get Alzheimer's or some rapidly degenerative neurological disease, it's stranger still for two people in the same house who are not related to each other by blood to get that. And it strongly suggests that something might be in the water, that there might be an environmental factor. Now, to this issue of, is there one environmental factor? Scientists have been suggesting it could be anything. It could be in shellfish. It could be from blue-green algae. It could be from cyanobacterial blooms. It could be from heavy metals. It could be from glyphosate. It could be from a combination of those things. Even just the other week, the CBC had a story, high levels of DDT found in New Brunswick Brook. And there were studies of the water in New Brunswick that were finding high levels of heavy metals and other things. There's a lot of things that could be at the root of this. So to say it's scientifically impossible that there was simply one toxin here, again, feels like the wrong way to look at this. And also, they only looked at 25 patients. They didn't look at the environmental factors. So it's strange for me that Dr. Lang is ruling out environmental factors based on looking at the patients and not the environment. Is this making sense?
I agree that how can you actually speak so definitively and not look at environmental factors? And like you said, there can be a variety and something can be occurring in more than one area, like DDT in rivers, as you just mentioned, or it could be a various amount of chemicals in different places that are different chemicals, right? We don't know because we don't know nearly enough about it.
It seems that there is just enough that is hinky in all of this, and the stakes are high enough that this kind of definitive dismissal, it just smells really bad to me. After the break, we're going to take a close look at this narrative that's taking shape that all of this can be traced to a single rogue neurologist. I feel like this is important enough to get really specific about. And I think most journalists, when you put like journalist versus scientist, the journalist loses. And I think it's a very dangerous thing for journalists to get into, like second-guessing medical professionals. I don't see it as journalists' role here, my role, Sarah's role, the New York Times or the Guardian's role. I think that our role in this is to look at the context, the framing, and then what we've looked at is the procedural stuff, the way in which the government has been shown to shut down inquiry, and what other scientists say, to point out if we could find when one scientist is saying one thing and another is saying another, we can bring that to the public. So that's the way that I'm pursuing this. And with that, I want to bring up another point here, which is I think that anybody who reads the coverage of this would get the sense that there's this one doctor, Alia Marrero.
We're joined by Dr. Alia Marrero, a neurologist.
Dr. Alia Marrero.
Dr. Marrero initially believed his patients had Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease,
who is facing a chorus of suspicion and disapproval that this one guy is on his own here. And we read about how really all of the suspicion, all of these alarm bells about there maybe being some mystery here is traced to this Marrero guy.
So we have this doctor in Moncton who says that these patients have some sort of condition that's linked, some sort of neurological disease that seems specific to these people in New Brunswick. And now this review says that doesn't exist.
That is not accurate. If anyone took that conclusion from it, and I've been reading on Reddit, a lot of people even calling Marrero unethical. A lot of people took from this that like maybe the real thing that happened here is that one doctor is misleading everybody. That is just inaccurate here. So again, relying on The Guardian and The New York Times here, Dr. Michael Coulthart, who is the head of the federal surveillance system for the Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, was even more direct. And this is all from like stuff that got leaked to media, he wrote in an email to colleagues. My scientific opinion is that there is something real going on in New Brunswick that absolutely cannot be explained by the bias or agenda of an individual neurologist. He too felt that the decline in Marrero's patients was most likely caused by an environmental trigger. I believe the truth will assert itself in time, he concluded. Dr. Samuel Weiss, in a leaked email published by The Guardian, in the spring of 2021, I felt incredibly optimistic that an all-of-government effort to unravel the mystery was in the cards. However, in short order, this scientific effort was shut down at the request of the federal and provincial governments. I don't think it is helpful to suggest or point to who or why. Suffice to say that we were prepared to marshal both financial and human scientific resources to tackle the mystery, but they were declined. All I can offer is my sincere apologies for our poor response to the mystery illness and my hope that you don't suffer too much. You and the 350 others affected deserve so much more. And Dr. Weiss is the scientific director of the Institute of Neuroscience, Mental Health and Addiction at the Canadian Institute of Health Research, and he's a member of the Canadian Medical Hall of Fame. I got one last thing, Laura. I know I'm trying people's patience with this, but like, it's amazing to me that this is being shooed away once again. And the final thing I want to point out here is that this new report that's dismissing this story from the Journal of the American Medical Association, who is the author of this report? Well, one of the authors is Dr. Sarmad Al-Shama. Back when that initial effort between provincial and federal scientists to get to the bottom of this was called off abruptly to everyone's surprise, the province of New Brunswick announced that there was an oversight committee that was taking over, and Dr. Al-Shama was on that oversight committee. That oversight committee had a lead researcher who is also an author of this JAMA report. So without suggesting anything untoward about these two doctors, if anyone thought that this was a new American independent study that is dismissing this whole mystery illness thing, it is not disconnected from the original story. It's got some of the same names involved who are a part of this drama from way back. This is not over for the hundreds of people whose lives have ended because of whatever this is. And it is not over because this new JAMA report is getting covered in a very uncritical way, as if the past never occurred, by journalists at NBC throughout Canada. The root of this is questions that I think the public legitimately has about the actions of industry in New Brunswick, about chemicals like glyphosate, about companies that use them like the Irvings. And I will very loudly report when and if a full environmental assessment rules out glyphosate, heavy metals, blue-green algae, all of these things conclusively. But that has not happened. And what I can say with confidence is there's just more than enough evidence that a extensive environmental assessment is just crucially needed here. This is not just going to go away.
No, this is not just going to go away. And I think it's really important that we have journalists who are willing to put in the time, which is often years and years, especially on this particular story. It's years and years what has occurred in New Brunswick, and there's more years to come. So journalists have to stay with the story too, and that's hard, and you really take it in the teeth. You're seen as sort of not one of the gang. You're seen as a subjective person instead of just objectively trying to find the truth.
That is our show for today. Thank you for joining me. You can email me at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. I post on Blue Sky. You can come talk to me on our Discord channel. Laura, can you remind people the name of your book, which will soon be back in print?
Well, right now, my book is called Crossing the Line, Violence and Sexual Assault in Canada's Sport. It came out in 1998 with McClelland and Stewart. So I am doing an update. Unfortunately, there are many cases now since 98 that I'll be looking at. It hasn't been published yet. This huge trial is still going on. So it'll be a while, but stick by and it will be coming out as soon as I can turn it around.
This episode is produced by James Nicholson, mixing and mastering by Caleb Thompson. Our director of audio is Max Collins. Sam Connert did the fact check on this episode. I'm the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
This is Bird Note. Some bird names get right to the point, like the gray catbird. Found from Canada to Colombia, these songbirds make a call like a kitten's meow. And they are, you guessed it, gray. In fact, ornithologists have named many gray birds for their predominant hue. Yet some species received more colorful descriptors than others, like the slate-colored grosbeak, a dark gray forest bird of Central and South America. Or the silvered antbird of the Amazon rainforest. The Plumbius vireo's name derives from the Latin word plumbum, meaning lead. The species is found in the western regions of the U.S. and Mexico, and their cool gray complexion helps set them apart from other vireos. The glaucous gull and glaucous tanager are named for the subtle light bluish tint of their feathers. In fact, botanists use the same word to describe plants with a waxy coating, like the gray gleam on succulent leaves and fresh grapes. Who knew birds come in so many different shades of gray? For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.